Ulele uale ule ulelei. Uale ulele uale ule ulelei.
Welcome to the Wild Mother Podcast for women who want to birth, mother, and live with pleasure, purpose, and power. The wisdom of Mother Nature is our guide as we dive deep into the subjects of physiologic birth, natural parenting, and conscious mothering. Join me, Dr. Jessica Hodgins, for evidence-based and soul-centered conversation with guest experts and real mamas just like you. Let's go. Welcome to today's episode, mamas. Today, I'm talking about something that I've come to view as one of the most important influences on how a woman experiences birth and motherhood. Today, I'm talking about connecting with our inner wisdom, living in our bodies instead of in our heads, and claiming our personal sovereignty. And I couldn't think of a more perfect guest to talk about today's topic than my very own sister, Rachel Hodgins. As well as being one of my best friends, Rachel is a feminine embodiment mentor and the host of the Weaving the Wild podcast. Her work as a feminine embodiment mentor is all about reclaiming and remembering the wildish wisdom that lies deep within our bones. How cool is that? From honoring our cyclical rhythm and dropping back into our bodies, embracing our intuitive nature and anchoring mind, body, and soul through simple, practical, earth, moon, and womb practices and rituals. She's seriously amazing. In today's episode, Rach and I talk about the feminine, what that term means, and how it's something to be embodied and experienced rather than intellectually understood. We talk about simple tools and practices to help you come back into your body, connect with your intuition, and align with the cyclical wisdom of the natural world. We talk about how the state of your nervous system influences your ability to hear your body's wisdom and your intuition, and so much more. Whenever I work with mamas preparing for birth and motherhood, the very first place I always start is not with physiologic birth or navigating the maternity system or anything else that's more obviously related to that journey. I always begin with your relationship to your body and your inner knowing. Because all that other stuff is really important to know, but your connectedness to your body and your inner wisdom and your personal truth is the thing that will guide you through all the rest. It's the foundation that the rest is built on, which is why I'm so excited to share this conversation with you, mamas, because Rach is so wise and so relatable, and she just has a way of making everything feel really simple and doable. And that's what we all need, right? Like, especially as mamas. Now, if you enjoy today's episode, don't forget to take a screenshot and share it on Instagram. And remember to tag me at Dr. Jessica Hodgins and Rach at rachel.hodgins. It would also mean so much to me if you took the 2 minutes it takes to leave a review over on iTunes, because that's what really helps to get these conversations in front of other women. And there's some seriously beautiful reviews over there already, like this one from this mama who said, "I've consciously avoided being influenced by others as a first-time mum, instead choosing to mother my baby intuitively. For me, this has meant breastfeeding, co-sleeping, baby wearing, gentleness, and responsiveness. I absolutely love the detail that Jessica goes into in this podcast, putting evidence and science behind the luscious, hormone-fueled high I get from mothering this way. Looking forward to many more episodes." How beautiful is that? And this is exactly the point of what I'm trying to do here, just to give you the assurance that you might need to not be influenced by outside perspectives and to instead trust your intuition as a mama and lean into the pleasure and the ease and, yes, those hormone-fueled highs that so often do come up for us when we let all the other voices and expectations go. So let's jump into it, mamas. Let's talk about dropping back into our bodies and connecting with our inner wisdom. So Rach, welcome to the podcast. I'm so excited to have you and that we can actually have a conversation and call it work.
I know. This is exciting. Thank you for having me. It's an absolute honor to be here. And I don't even know where this conversation is going to go today, Jess. I'm trying to keep it in line.
We'll try and stay focused. So one of the reasons that I wanted to get you on the podcast, Rach, was because something I've come to notice in working with mothers is that a really big factor that plays into women's experience of birth and motherhood is how connected we are or not with our bodies and with our inner wisdom and with our personal truth. And while you're not a mother yet, your story is such a beautiful example of a woman journeying back home to herself even before she's become a mother. And what I love about you is that you make it so simple. Like, you have such beautiful, simple tools and practices for coming back into your body and into your personal truth. So what I wanted to talk to you about today in today's conversation is like your own personal story, just to get a picture of that. Like, what does it look like when a woman rejects all of this conditioning and comes back to herself? What does that actually look like in real life? And also just to talk about some of the tools and practices that you use, because they're so simple. This is exactly what mothers need, like not complex, fancy, practices that only exist, you know, like outside of real life, but just really simple tools and practices. So can you start by telling us a little bit about your work in the world, remembering that work doesn't have to be paid? What is your work in the world and the journey that's led you to do this work?
Sure. So maybe if I start with where I'm at, what I do now, and maybe work backwards a little bit, but because I feel like my journey is very much one, it's been a very interesting unfolding, but also I don't feel like there's been one like pivotal moment, if you know what I mean. A lot of people I know, especially when they kind of enter this sort of work, is they often have something in particular that really sparks a shift or something. Like, it might be that they reach rock bottom, or they have a health crisis, or you know, something like that, or even
they become a mother.
For you, it was, you know, this incredibly amazing thing that, but you know, once you experienced it, you were changed. There was no going back. For me personally, that hasn't, I wouldn't say exactly been the case. It's been very much a process of like following the breadcrumbs in a way. So in terms of who I am now and what I do is, I suppose define myself at the moment as a feminine embodiment mentor. And that might change. That's just what I call myself now. But ultimately, like, this work, I wear a few different hats. So, you know, it comes through in different forms or formats. So I work one-on-one with women as a mentor. I'll offer different workshops and masterclasses and courses and things like that, kind of if and when they spark within me. I don't really plan things. It's just when something feels exciting, I'm like, yes, let's do that. Yeah. And what else? Oh, and I have a podcast, Leaving the Wild podcast. So on that, like, I talk a lot about the things I'm interested in, and also like fortnightly moon musings. So I'll you know, explore the energy of the full and the new moons, and yeah, get amazing speakers on and things like that. So that's kind of like how I do my work. But in terms of what my work is it's really about awakening and really realigning ourselves as individuals, and therefore as a collective, like culturally, as a society, with the feminine once more, calling the feminine essence back into our lives, because we are in such dire need of it. We are craving the feminine and the mother. So a lot of the work I do really is, it's what I've kind of come to really realize and accept is that I work with whatever's kind of just what's interesting me, basically, and what's kind of calling to me. So that could be anything from like cyclical living is a huge one, like our ability to connect with our menstrual cycles, our inner rhythms, because we don't have to just be in a bleeding body to really home in on our, you know, inner feminine cyclic rhythm, but also kind of zooming out, really aligning with the larger cycles at work. So like the lunar cycles and the sun and our seasonal cycles, you know, like right now, as we're recording this, we're moving into spring. We're at the end of August, 2021. So like, really feeling that, how can we align with that energy within our bodies and you know, yeah, letting ourselves kind of be within that energy.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much, you know, a lot of my work is around like a ritual and practices to really ground and anchor ourselves, to strengthen our intuition, to rebuild our trust in our bodies and with other women, you know, all mm-hmm. sorts of work really. But yeah. It all kind of falls under the umbrella of the feminine to me.
And what is the feminine? Like when you start talking about that, what does that mean? Like, because I think for, you know, a lot of us, if we haven't delved far into this work, we think, you know, like in terms of maybe femininity, in terms of like as defined by the patriarchy. So what is the feminine for you?
Oh, it's such a hard question.
I know, I'm asking you the big question.
You know, I think one of the hardest things for people to really wrap their head around the feminine, like quote unquote, when they're starting to kind of, you know, explore these sort of areas, is the fact that she really doesn't, she's not here to be defined or labeled. She is like non-linear. She is like non-labeling. She's fluidity, right? She's duality. She is not one or the other. And I think that's where our mindset really, really struggles with this kind of, you know, our patriarchal culture, which is about linearity and being able to define and label and fit everything neatly into a box. And the feminine's like, throw that damn box out of the window and just be like, what is it? Why do you need a name for whatever it is that you're exploring or moving through and experiencing or feeling right now? Just be with it.
Yeah.
You know, accept it. So
I think that's that difference between like having like a cognitive understanding of something like in our heads and actually understanding something in our body, like feeling it in our body.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. So like when we talk, if I was to define the feminine.
We didn't really do that, did we?
Sorry. that's what it's about to me is like, the words that come through when I think of the feminine is fluidity, is like not just a surrender but an allowing, like to openly allow, you know, to surrender, and softening, as well as like life and fire and you know, so what she really is about, what the feminine is about, is this cyclic, non-linear, all-encompassing life energy. And life includes death, you know, we can go into that maybe as well if you want, but like a full holistic kind of understanding of our world. And I think that's where, again, coming back to like the way that we struggle to kind of understand, is the way that the patriarchal kind of culture teaches us, is that, you know, life is linear. We work so hard to follow the straight and narrow, and yet every other aspect or element of this world, of this universe, of our cosmos is cyclic, is, you know, it begins and returns all the way to the beginning again. And we fight that for whatever reason, we fight it. And yeah, so.
And that's a cultural thing. That's because we live 100%. In a patriarchal culture. And like, that's why I love like that. And I know like, this is why you do such a beautiful job of articulating the feminine, but there also is no like definition of it because it is embodied. And this is why like so much of what you do is about coming back into your body, because when you're in your body, our bodies are cyclical. They just are. We are part of the natural world, and the natural world is cyclical. So of course we are. And it's only when we're in our heads that we forget that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a lot of the work that I find myself doing especially when I work one-on-one is like, I don't consider myself, I'm not a teacher, I'm not like a coach or anything like that. I'm just there to be present and reflect back. So and kind of help to guide, I suppose, in some ways, the wisdom and knowledge and understanding that's already there within you. But so much of it is just recognizing and witnessing what we are thinking and saying for what they are, which is, it's a story. And I mean, it can be true, or, you know, true to you, and it can be false, but as long as you were kind of prescribing to it and not questioning it, it is your truth. And so that is just, it's entirely in your head. But once you like start to unravel that and you start to question, you are like, well, hang on, how do I know what is my truth? Really what it comes down to is pulling yourself out of that swirling like whirlwind of thoughts that just keep you in that current, right? That like loop of way of thinking, and drop back into the body, because the body will communicate. The body does tell us, you know, what we want and need and desire, which is our intuition. And it's quite clear most of the time if we allow ourselves to drop from the head into the body.
Yeah, exactly. And this is why I wanted to get you on a podcast, because what you teach is so relevant to the experience of motherhood, because in so many different ways, like I don't even know where to start, like cyclically, the experience of motherhood is, it follows those same, the ebbs and flows of the cycle in terms of times of intense growth and then times of deep rest. And then of the life and death cycle, we kind of, we birth a baby and we birth this new life, but that also actually means the death of who we were. And so for a lot of women, we go through this kind of identity death, you know, it after the birth of our baby, and we have to let that die. We have to be okay with that dying to be able to be reborn into whoever the hell we're going to be in this new iteration of ourselves. But when we don't know how to be with death, we don't understand that death is part of that life, death, life cycle, we fight it. And I feel like this is why so many women do actually struggle so much with that identity shift that happens, you know, as we become mothers, because we don't know how to be with death. We haven't learned that that death is where life begins.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just so much. That's just like one tiny example of how I think everything you talk about is relevant to the experience of motherhood, to be with rest as well, to rest as a mother, you know, like it's, yeah, there's just so much in what you teach.
And I think in that, like, how do I put this, like everything that you just said, like everything we experience when we go through like the rite of passage that is pregnancy and birth and into motherhood as well, requires us to be able to, like, setting aside all the crap, what it's really requiring of us is to be able to really embody ourselves, our truth in any given moment, and to be able to witness and recognize where we're at, and allow it to be and to come through. And I think that's, I was going to say it's easier said than done, but it's like often, as you've kind of also explored like on this podcast and in your other work, but often we only really kind of come up against that in the likes of like, oh, I'm already pregnant now, and now I'm facing all of these things. And I think, like, if imagine if we were raised to already kind of be in sync and really witness and align with our ebbing and flowing of energy, how much easier it would be to just accept in these massive like pivotal shifts of transformation that we go through throughout life, including birth and pregnancy. Like, yeah, it would be a completely different approach and kind of mindset mentality around the changes that we're going through, because we're not fighting. We're not kind of, I think what it comes down to is before we reach these points in our lives, we live in very much a way in a society that it teaches us and encourages us to stay the same, to not change. Like the goal is to stay consistent, and you know, that's the whole thing with not just the feminine, but of people within feminine bodies. Our bodies are not consistently, you know, I love it. Who is it? I think it's Lisa Lister says, I'm consistently inconsistent, like, and embracing that. And, you know, just really, really loving and you have to say kind of honoring and witnessing who you are in any given moment. And not fighting it.
Because as you're saying that, it's just bringing up this whole thought in me that I started thinking about the archetypes and the fact that our culture values the maiden archetype and it doesn't really value the mother. It values like youth and beauty and freedom and independence, and it doesn't value the archetype of the mother, which is why so many of us become the mother and then we're like, well, I want to be the maiden. I still want to be that archetype. And of course we can embody all the archetypes at once, but in terms of valuing, you know, this archetype of the mother, But what that also brought up for me was, I don't know how to say this because this is just a thought that sprung up in me now, but you were talking about archetypes, that I was talking about archetypes, and I was thinking about like actually a very masculine archetype that women have been trying to embody of this steadfast, always the same, always consistent through the months, through the years, the same. And if we have other archetypes, and that's why, you know, that even the archetype of the moon is such a good, is that an archetype? I don't know. It's maybe a metaphor. I don't know. You can talk more about that than I can. but you know, in terms of just giving us ways of thinking about being, you know, in this constant state of ebb and flow, like not just through our monthly cycles, but also and through the yearly cycles, but then also through our life cycles as well as we become mothers, and being okay with that constant ebb and flow and shift.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where did that come from?
I love it. And there's so many things I need to say just from that. First off, I just want to throw in around the archetypes because I think this is really relevant to as we become mothers, understanding who we've been and our relationship with the maiden as well. Because yes, to a degree, like our culture does value the maiden in the sense that we're encouraged to be young and fertile and vibrant and pretty, right?
Mm-hmm.
But people hang shit on the maiden.
Totally, yeah.
And what I find and what I really feel, I think, is the maiden in her highest expression is about curiosity, is about learning and exploring the world and her role, her place in it. It's basically in being the, you know, the innocent, yes, naive, like kind of pure, but I don't see it in like the pure like virgin way.
Mm.
It's like I know nothing about the world and I'm entering in it, and isn't it wonderful? There's so much to learn.
Yeah.
And we are raised in a world, one of the biggest things that I continually am like reoccurringly kind of navigating and unraveling in my own life is this fear around looking like I don't know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something, you know, we're raised in the age of the experts, right?
Yeah.
And there's this fear around not knowing, basically, what, you know, in all sorts of fields. And I think this is where if we were to truly kind of navigate our early adulthood in aligned as much as we can with the highest expression of our maiden energy, our maiden archetype, there's this kind of willingness to approach anything, you know, as a way of like of learning, of not needing to know, but to find out.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, discovering, oh, this is how I feel about it. This is what I think. This is what feels good for me. This is, you know, and learning more about ourselves and our own kind of capacity to kind of figure our own shit out in that phase of our life. So that's the whole idea, right? So that as we move to the point where we start to begin to embody the mother archetype, that's where we really start. We know now. We know the world. We know our place in it. We know the role we're here to play. And that's where we can really step up and start to embody it. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to put that in there.
No, I'm so glad that you did, because I think you're totally right. And again, it's a patriarchal thing. We hierarchize things. Yeah. So maiden is not as good as mother. And once you become mother, then the next like spiritual step is to become crone. Whereas actually the goal is actually to embody all of these energies at once and in balance. So yes, I think I'm really glad that you did make that point. And I love the way you talk about the maiden energy, because as you're saying it, I'm kind of thinking to myself, wow, mothers really need that energy as well, because we are, particularly in the early years of motherhood, we are learning. So much of it is new, and we need to come to it with an openness and a willingness to learn.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to add there, back to when you had all of your amazing thoughts come
from being downloaded,
is you know, talking about the different archetypes that, or you know, energies that we can use to kind of I can't remember your wording, but basically, yeah, like to help us bring us back into a less of a linear kind of mindset. And, you know, like you said, to fit into this world, we really have had to fight to prove that we can live like men in a man's world.
Yeah.
But there are many, many examples within the wider scope. Again, this is, it comes back to, like I said, if we actually zoom out away from just humanity, the rest of the world is cyclic, right? So it's anywhere. But for me, the moon was a huge, like really early on, she was like a pivotal discovery within my own world. And so that ability to just be able to witness something that is in constant change and yet is completely consistent within it.
Consistently
and inconsistent. Yeah. Same with the sun, you know, rises gloriously, incredibly, beautifully every single morning, and yet it's the most mundane thing, right?
Yeah.
So she rises every day, sets every day, and you can guarantee it will rise again tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see these cycles, you know, autumn leads to winter, but we know spring will come again.
Yeah.
And so when we ourselves experience ebb and flow within our lives, and this can be on a smaller scale or a wide, like as in, like you said, we go through life cycles as well as just like maybe we're having a crappy day, but also maybe the last 2 years have been just really uncomfortable, you know, because we're going through a time essentially of shedding and there's a death that's about to take place.
Yeah.
We can still know that there is something. It's not, nothing is stagnant. Nothing stays the same, even if it's been a longer than, you know, we would prefer kind of period.
Yeah.
Something will shift again.
Yeah.
Just wanted to put that in there too.
No, totally. Because that's something that I found so comforting. And as I started to notice my own, how my energy moves through the seasons, like through the kind of the yearly cycle, I've really noticed that. And it's really comforting to me because there are times of the year where I personally am like generally pretty consistently through the years. At that time of year, I'm quite flat or I feel quite frustrated or something. And then as I've noticed that this kind of happens every year, I've stopped fighting it and I've just been like, this is where I am right now and I will come out of it again. And, you know, right around October, November is when my energy really spikes. Every year I just feel great around that time of year. And I know that that's coming and that so I'm able to be with both now. It's really comforting.
Yeah. And I think that's, it comes with a level of, it's not just about awareness. It's about an ability to just accept and allow. And I think this is sometimes, I think when we begin to explore anything within the feminine, and everyone's journey is different, so we'll start in different places and then we'll end up in all different places. But because elements of the feminine is so kind of like intangible, right? It's not like the masculine where it's like black and white, here's the steps and things to do.
Yeah.
Feminine's very much like, just come find me, just like sit here for a bit, just like swim around, figure it out yourself. and so we often begin with, okay, well, what books can I read? What things can I do? What classes can I take? And when we do that, we really kind of fixate on like the, as you said, like the intellectual side of understanding these things. So for example, like understanding our cycle. So, okay, now I know, like at this point, I'm going to ovulate. So this is when I feel this way. And I'm going to be like feeling like way more confident, able to talk more. I'll maybe feel like my libido will be higher, et cetera, et cetera. But then when we as an individual are consistently, you know, ovulating each month, and yet we're like, why do I not want to have sex right now though? Like, as in, why is my libido not high? And you start questioning yourself and like, I should be fitting into this. And why am I not?
Yeah.
Yeah. We start to kind of miss the opportunity. I don't want to say miss the point, but the opportunity that we're actually being invited to explore is not, this is how the cycle works, this is how you should fit into it. It's about exploring and really connecting to what is your rhythm.
Yeah.
And that's about things that, sorry.
That's about the whole expert thing too, isn't it? Like, we want to, well, somebody else knows what my rhythm is. So if I read this book, they'll be able to tell me. And like, I think that can be a great first step, but you're right. It's like, it's about becoming your own expert. And you only do that by checking in very consciously with your body and your energy and where you are.
And it may not make sense. And I think this is like, especially like as we, this doesn't change as we, you know, just because you don't have a cycle anymore, even if you're, you know, moving into pregnancy, or, you know, you've newly given birth and you're like a postpartum mum and you're like, well, I should be starting to feel this, mm-hmm. or I should feel this way, and yet I don't.
Yeah.
It's like,
well, what's wrong with me? Like, yeah.
But literally, like, you know, essentially what we're really doing is it's really, really hard to not get caught up in the stories, right?
Mm.
And this is basically where I'm at in my life, but this is where I come in for, like, within like my one-on-one work as well, is like, okay, witnessing this as an external story, right? And just fucking it off. Like, yeah. Just basically understanding, like, to be able to disengage essentially to all of the, I use the word stories, I know, because like as in some that may not resonate for some people. So maybe like narratives or patterns, conditionings and things like that. But for me, stories is like everyone has a story.
Mm-hmm.
You can choose to continue following it. You can turn the page. You can skip a chapter. You can go pick up an entirely different book. We're all following our own story.
Mm-hmm.
But for example, if you're a postpartum mother, and you are not feeling how you think you should be feeling,
mm-hmm.
what, you know, the place that we should be kind of inviting ourselves and calling ourselves back to in that moment is to actually just question why, like, why am I meant to, like, what is the external narrative that's taking place in my head right now that's telling me I mm-hmm. should be a certain way?
Why do because I think that I need to be X when actually I'm feeling Y? Like, why am I not okay with Y?
Yeah. with me and where I'm at.
Yeah.
And I think we can really kind of buy into a lot of, we don't even realize how deeply ingrained the collective narrative really is within us.
And this is what is so powerful about this, is recognizing what those stories are, and then it can become a choice. Do I want to live by this story, or do I want a different one? Do I actually hold these values, or am I just living according to values that aren't even mine? Like, and this is where, so I'm very lucky that I can call you and talk my shit through with you. I wish everyone had a rage. So I'm at the moment, and I talk about this, like, I'm kind of in the preconception phase of gradually opening towards having another child. And I was talking about this with you recently, and I was like, I feel like I should be more ready than I am. I feel like at, you know, X number of months, when Ned is X number of months old, I should have the other baby. Why? Why that time? What? Like, why? Why does it have to be that time? Why does Ned have to be X number of months old? Why do I feel like I have to control it to that level? And this is, it's because of how our culture thinks that we should have babies. Mm-hmm. But I don't even value our culture's values.
It's,
I don't
want to hold.
It's ridiculous. But it takes bringing that consciousness, even the, and then it's like it'll drop again, and it'll drop again at a deeper level, because you can know it, but then you have to like know it in your body, and you have to keep reminding yourself of it. Like, it's this constant coming back to, well, is this actually true for me? Or like, what is my truth?
Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that's really important to remember here, and you said it so beautifully, is like, we are not going to be in this space all the time. Mm. And, you know, especially given the world that we live in, we will be caught up in stuff again, you know, but it's the ability to kind of frequently as possible bring ourselves back into just to question and not beat ourselves up about the fact that, you know, oh, I got caught up in the stories again. Like, of course you did. You're human. It's okay. It doesn't matter. You're doing a hell of a lot better than, you know, 90% of the bloody world, because you're aware of that, and you've clicked back in, and you've called yourself back home, basically.
Yeah.
Even if just for a minute. And I think the more we can do that, the more we can come comfortable and familiar enough with how to do that for ourselves. And that can change as well. It's not going to always be the one thing that works for us to ground and to center again. But the more, especially we as women, but the more that people in general are able to kind of just tap out for a moment and to tune into themselves, like the more authentic and aligned we are in this world.
And often what I find happens is we end up doing things that are that actually kind of go against a lot of the cultural norms. So I feel like this is a good opportunity to get quite practical with you and talk, because this is what you do, and you've actually really restructured your whole life to allow yourself to do that and to give yourself the freedom to do that. But I feel like you don't have to change your entire life to be able to come back home to your truth. And this is why, like, you have just some really simple practices. Mamas, a quick interruption here, because if you're listening to this episode, I'm going to go out on a limb and assume it's because you're interested in having a beautiful, undisturbed, physiologic birth. Did you know that the vast majority of women are capable of having a physiologic birth? So research from around the world tells us that about 85% of women are capable of giving birth without interventions. But despite all this, only a very small percentage of women in developed countries today actually birth their babies without pharmaceuticals or interventions. So if you're wondering why that is and how you can maximize your chances of having a safe and empowering physiologic birth, I want to invite you to grab your free copy of my guide, The 4 Things You Actually Need to Know to Prepare for a Physiologic Natural Birth. You will find precisely zero fluff here. I put this 20-page guide together to resource you with everything you need to have the birth that you dream of without the misinformation overload you get from searching all over the internet. I am tired of seeing mamas waste their time with distracting, irrelevant, and incorrect information and practices that don't actually make a difference to your likelihood of getting the physiologic birth that you want. So in this guide, I'm giving you the evidence-based information as well as the practical strategies that I know work, because these are the things that have supported me and the mamas I serve to have safe, beautiful, empowering physiologic births. So you'll find that guide linked in the show notes. Go and download it right now before you forget, or you can jump online and you'll find it at jessicahodgins.com/guide to birth. That's jessicahodgins.com/guide to birth. It's called The 4 Things You Actually Need to Know to Prepare for a Physiologic Natural Birth, and it's yours to download now. Okay, back to the conversation, mamas. So, Rach, can you talk to us about some of the tools that you personally use to come back to your own inner wisdom at times when you've doubted it or you've found it hard to hear your own inner voice? What are some of the tools and practices that you use?
To be honest, I think the more I kind of lean in or towards my inner voice or my inner truth, whatever you want to call it, my most authentic self, it's essentially I've just needed to simplify. It's been a journey. It's basically my mission now is to how simple can I get in my life? But I think it's a kind of a larger kind of, it's a bit of an umbrella thing here. So I can go into more details, obviously, but I think that's probably one of the keys essentially is we as humans overcomplicate everything, everything, even to what am I going to wear to that event is well, what if this happens? And what if it, what if it might get a bit chilly towards the end of the night? It's just breathe, just take a breath. It's all fine. You're not going to die. So, and I think that's where I get to with most things. It's oh my gosh, we get so worked up in our heads. And so for me, a lot of what it's been about in terms of being able to just to drop into my body enough to be able to know what it is that I'm wanting and I'm desiring. And I suppose even on that, just a side note, the ability to recognize that I want and desire things, not just need, but I want this. I desire this. This is something that I want for me and that, feels good. And I think as women especially, is often we have to begin with what we need, like in this moment, but really we deserve so much more than that. Mm. And the ability to kind of tap into, having the capacity to tap into and tune into our wants and our desires is what can really kind of unlock and unleash our inner creatrix, our ability to be creatrixes of our life. Yeah. So that's like, yeah, just like a little overview there. But for me, what that's looked like, I mean, it, so many areas, where do I even start? Essentially, I believe in really, really simple practices and rituals. So I think that we as humans are very disconnected in our lives, and part of us, whether we're conscious or not, we crave ritual. We crave connection to something deeper and greater than just ourselves. Mm. And that's what has really called me back to connect to more kind of ancestral kind of practices, and not necessarily in a way that's trying to replicate them in my own life. Like, I do, it's fun and it's important, you know, it's been potent for me, but ultimately, like, the kind of intention behind it is more about kind of exploring and connecting to how my ancestors related to the world, how they understood the world and their place in it. Mm-hmm. And that's a very much kind of an earth-based kind of understanding. So for me, a lot of my practices are around connecting to earth, to plants, to the cycles of nature. Mm. So,
and this is about coming back into your body again, isn't it? As a physical animal on the earth.
Yeah. And literally, like, I find myself, like, basically everyone I'm talking to recently, I basically just say to everyone, like, go outside and just place your hands on the earth. Mm-hmm. Like, put your palms down on the mother. And, like, when we talk about grounding and, like, earthing, obviously, like, people like think of taking your shoes and socks off and walking on the ground, which is amazing. It's like, it's such an incredible practice. And our feet themselves are so numb that, like, you know, it's an incredible practice to awaken ourselves. Like, our feet are our roots, you know, that connect us to the earth. But our hands are already awakened. Like, we, you know, in terms of sensation, we feel like a lot through our fingertips and our palms. So I can almost guarantee you, if you go outside, place your palms on the earth and just breathe in deeply and exhale fully, you will feel the current of energy between your hands and the Great Mother. You will feel it. And in that moment, it doesn't matter, like, you know, what else is going on. You in that moment have called yourself back into alignment with not just the earth, the world, like the entire damn universe, because it's all one. It's all working together. It is all the one current of cosmic energy, and you're a part of it. You just tapped back in, and it's as simple as that.
And I love that, because, like, as a, you know, as a mum, and lots of mums listening, you could literally go and do that right now. Take your kids. Yes. I don't care how old your kids are, if they're a week old or a 2-year-old in my case, or a 10-year-old, like, go and
do it with you.
They would love it. Like, go and put your hands on the earth and take a big breath, and they'll mimic you, and they will feel it with their simplicity. And this is what I love about this, is there's no need to be alone to do this. You don't need half an hour of meditation. You don't need to light a candle, or you can bring all of that, but this is just bringing it down to the very essence of the why. And as you were saying, how did my ancestors understand their place in the world? Not what rituals did they use to enact that or to recognize that, but, like, how do they understand it? And that simple act of placing your hands on the earth, it literally couldn't get more simple.
No.
Embodies that way of being in the world.
Yes. Yeah. And even, like, you know, so I think of, like, ritual as essentially, like, it's an anchor. It anchors us. And so it's something I think that we miss a lot, obviously, in our culture, but it's something that can actually be very easily brought into our daily lives, whether we're, you know, like you said, I don't have kids right now. Hopefully, you know, one day, that's the plan. But even as, like, someone who has, like, three kids and it's dinner time, you can mm-hmm. still bring a sense of reverence to what you're doing if you choose. And you mm-hmm. don't have to. This is something I say all the time, is you don't have to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to do anything in this world that you don't want to do. You can literally choose whatever you want. And if, like, in all of the work you're doing, if you're going through all of this shadow work and suddenly you're like, I don't want to though, don't.
Yeah.
If that yeah. seems too much to work through right now, don't do it right now. You don't.
And this is what I love about, you were talking about this before, about what do I want and what do I desire? Because those things, we've been made to think of them as actually being kind of a bit frivolous maybe, but actually that is our soul, our body speaking to us. The things that spark joy are actually the things that we're meant to follow. Like, it's not meant to be complicated. How else would our soul communicate with us? It doesn't have words. It's going to be through the things that pull us in. So yeah, if, you know, lighting a candle and making your nighttime meal preparation, if that feels heavy to you, don't do it. Find the thing that does.
Yeah.
It might be putting on Beyonce and dancing around with the kids. That might be the thing. And that is the thing you're meant to do.
Yes. And I think that's why it can be really, it sounds like a corny kind of idea, but it can be really helpful to, as you definitely be open and explore things. Like, if you haven't done something, you can't say it doesn't work for you unless mm-hmm. you've just given it a go. But having a little list of things that you know actually bring you back and that call you present, because, and they can be completely different. Like, my list, I don't have a physical one these days, but it could be like cooking, it could be pulling a card, it could be just intuitively moving, like dancing, and things like that. It could be going outside, literally just making a cup of tea and just walking around my garden is my favorite thing at the moment. So things will change. Like I said earlier, what brings you home to your body and what centers you may not, and probably it won't be consistent. It won't stay the same. So if something isn't working for you, like if you've always like meditated, or you've always journaled, or you've always like danced and it's been a really powerful, potent practice and it's always worked for you, but suddenly you're like, it's just, I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm feeling really overwhelmed at the moment and that's not working for me anymore. I'm just like, I've just lost it. You know, it's like, you haven't lost it. You have not lost it. You just have to look somewhere else. And that's beautiful. Like, that's just you changing. It's ebbing and flowing. So I think, yeah, like really kind of being intuitive in that. And we overcomplicate things a lot. So when we think, oh, what practices can I do that are going to ground me? We tend to think of like, oh, even if it's just 20 minutes of yoga or doing this and that, but there's still like, we hold a lot of stories around things, particularly around time, and like having the energy of things to do, like anything that's longer than like 2 minutes, basically. So we can feel restricted in actually even starting or acting on any of those things if we make them too big. I say big, 20 minutes of yoga isn't big, but you know what I mean. Whereas if your list includes as well things like having a cup of tea, and your cup of tea can be at the same time as writing out your list of things to do today or walking around your garden, like you can do anything. But if it's the act of having, just sipping away at a tea while you do it, that brings pleasure and it brings a peace and a comfort. And that to me is just as important. Yeah, so just like really, really simple things. One of the main things I think we're missing, particularly right now, as I said, we're recording this in August 2021. There's a lot of things going on collectively. But what we're really missing is our ability to tap into joy and pleasure and comfort. We're so overwhelmed by everything else that we can't seem to find them, and they're there. They're the most simple things, even if it's watching a sunrise, even it's like choosing to get up a bit earlier to be able to witness something so magical.
Because the other stuff is so addictive, isn't it? It's like, it really, it's literally addictive and it pulls you in. And the other thing I find, and this is 100% a story of mine, is that I'm not allowed to have just a generally nice day. So if I'm like, I might have a really lovely day with Ned and I'll just be pottering around, and then like my partner will come home and I'll be like, I've got a cooked dinner, I've got a like all of these things, because it's not legitimate to just be happy and relaxed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I'm like, well, that's the wrong story. That's not what I meant to be doing. I'm meant to be a little bit stressed out and flustered. So, yeah, you know, and so I'll kind of unconsciously, yeah, exactly. I'll slip back into that. And so when you bring consciousness to it, like, that is so weird to say out loud, right? Like, what? Why would you do that? But it's this unconscious thing. And when you bring consciousness to it, you're like, what? Why would you do that? Yeah. and choose something else.
Yeah. And I think that's something that I have just been layer upon layer unraveling myself. I think we all have to, or not, as I said, you can choose to do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But that's literally like what led me to quit my job. And just, I got to a point where I was like, I can't do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I had basically, like, you know, we kind of didn't really touch on like my story, like,
yeah, so let's go back to that a little bit now. Like, what did lead you to this different way of living and yet to quit your job and just like, yeah, let's hear a little bit about that story.
Yeah, basically, so if I was to kind of rewind a little bit and just give context, like, this is essentially, like I said, this is my story is not one where it's been a huge like moment, like a pivotal moment of change. It's just been me slowly dropping in.
Mm-hmm.
Basically. And, you know, I've done a few things. I went to uni and I then I went, did makeup and worked in marketing after that. So various kind of things that unraveled. But I think what I've found is it's been a real process of, to be honest, when I kind of look at the journey I've been on, I started, I guess, like you say, like my adult life, very, very numb. And it's taken a long, so for context, and I, you know, we don't need to go, this is a whole other conversation probably, but don't need to go into it too much. But so during my year 12, our family lost our brother Glenn to cancer. So that for me happened when I was, you know, smack bang in the middle of my last year of school. And really, among everything else that went on at that time, that really, in hindsight, sort of set the scene for how I felt and who I was stepping into this adult world, basically, mm. right? So, you know, at this time, it was like kind of like a rite of passage. You know, you leave home, I went to uni, stepping out into the big wide world, and yet I was in a place where I was really, yeah, like grieving, essentially. Mm. And 2 years into uni, like just, you know, very anxious and both like numb and overwhelmed. So I was in this kind of place where I was really kind of I made a lot of decisions at that time where I would normally have been like, hello world, here I am. I was very much like, I didn't have the capacity to do that. And I was very much playing, I made decisions that were safer and felt safe and comfortable for me at that time, which wasn't really in my nature.
Mm.
When I, you know, you compared me, little Rach.
Mm-hmm. I was very like, exuberant, bubbly person. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was going to be like a famous movie star and singer. Yes. And like,
I well remember that.
Yeah. So there was a few years that, yeah, I was very kind of numb and then made the most random, seemingly random decision to move interstate to Sydney and study makeup. And that decision kind of led to this unfolding of events over the next few years. Basically, as I said, from there, I was doing all these amazing things. I was makeup on runways and fashion shoots and stuff. And then I got a job in marketing, completely random, no background. It was just so wild, but amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then my partner and I moved back home to where, you know, where we're from. And I took just like a normal retail job. And it took probably like 4 years or so in that job where it was very much, I talk about following the breadcrumbs. This is basically a time where all of these different threads started to make themselves known to me, basically. And it was essentially in all of these different forms and facets, it was the feminine revealing herself to me. And I just, part of me, like my soul, my just literally something in my gut just was so hungry for it.
Mm-hmm.
So thirsty for it, was craving it. And so it was really a process of just like kind of following these little bits and pieces, which eventually, like, these all these threads kind of started to weave together eventually, to a point where you know, I'd started holding some like women's circles and things like that. And then 2020 arrived. And, you know, everyone has their own experience of 2020. Mine was quite incredible. And what I experienced personally was my workplace shut down for like 2 months. And suddenly I was in a position that I'd never been in my entire life. Like I said, I don't have kids. I don't have, you know, a whole lot of responsibilities in that way. And at that point, my work was not happening. So I found myself for 2 months, like, yeah, basically nowhere to go, no one to have to see. And like, you know, I would love, you know, not that I didn't want to see family and friends, but also there was no expectation because I literally couldn't. Mm-hmm. So I had like at least 8 weeks of, okay, well, what do you want to do, Rach? Mm. And I literally got for the first time in my life this taste of how it would feel to live a life completely unattached to the narrative that I've been living so far, which is very much one kind of like on autopilot, just get up, go to work, come home, very numb, but also like kind of fearful, like if you don't do this, like you're gonna have money and all yada yada yada.
Yeah.
Then
yeah, so it's like very numb, but also still holding, like having the sparks of what you wanted, but still holding those narratives that held you back from it. Like, well, I've got to earn money and people will think I'm lazy if I quit my job. And yeah.
So all of those stories. And then the text came through from my boss, like, good news, we're opening as of this date. And I was sat on the floor and I just cried. I was devastated. And it seemed so silly. My boyfriend, my poor boyfriend, came home like minutes after I got that text. And the look on his face, like he was so worried. He thought someone had died in the family. He was like, what's wrong? What's happened? And I was like, I've got to go back to work. But I was devastated. And really in that moment, I knew I couldn't do this anymore. That I'd had a taste and I knew what I needed. And I went back to work maybe within a month. I had made the decision. I remember talking to you on the phone about it, and I made the decision within a month that I was leaving. And I had no real, I had all these ideas. I didn't have any real guarantee. I didn't have a source of established income, which is really what I'd been waiting and holding off for.
Yeah.
To be able to leave my job. But I was just at a point where I was like, I am so depleted by the thought of continuing this that I can't anymore.
Yeah.
So that's what led it to it.
And this is what I love hearing about this, because I can think of similar instances in my life where we think we don't know the answer, but actually the answer is screaming at us. Your body was saying, I cannot go and do that. That is the answer. But it's the stories that hold us back, but we know the answer. We almost always know our truth. It's just that we let the other stories get in as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I think just recalling on, you know, in terms of like the practices that bring me home to my body, what I really was desiring was, again, it was a simplicity within life, but it was an ability to be able to really drop into my own rhythm and my own cycle. And in that, you know, it looks like a lot of ways, but like in that was even just to be able to align my life with my cycle, like with my own inner rhythms, yeah. And things like that. And it's funny now, like I look back and I go, like all the things, like I used to write out my dream day and all the things that it included. When I actually look at it, I'm like, I could have done basically every single one of them while I was working. I just didn't know that I had the choice. I didn't know that I had the choice that I could get up early and watch the sunrise until I had a complete entire day at my disposal that I could create and design however I wanted. And I then chose to get up early and watch the sunrise.
Yeah.
But part of that as well was aligning the way that I structured my life around my own rhythm, my own inner cycle as well. And I think that's something that we can do even if we're in a workplace. It's just that not only are we not aware of how, we don't witness it. We don't see it demonstrated to us in any way that seems tangible or you know, so that we can see how we might emulate that within our own life.
Yeah.
So that's something else that I'm wanting to change.
Yeah. And that's why like even literally just talking about this is doing that, because you don't have to, as you were kind of alluding to, you don't have to literally quit your job to start to design your life. Like, design is a very conscious, if that's an action, isn't it? Like, to design your life around the things that you need. So, like, it can be much simpler than that. Actually, just getting clear on the vision and then weaving that into the reality of your life, and that will shape the reality of your life.
Yeah. And I think that comes back to, you know, when I was talking earlier about our wants and our desires, a practice that I often will recommend, and I do this obviously myself, but when I hold like a circle or something like that, to bring ourselves into a place of stillness. And often, like, I picture myself like within the void. So this might be a good practice, like during like the dark moon or like a new moon kind of period, is to take yourself to the void. And to me, that looks like just infinite, inky, velvet blackness. So almost like when you're like a sensory deprivation kind of thing, where you're just like floating in space. It's not starry or anything. It's just the void. And in that place where there's no distractions, there's nothing there, right? There's no stories. There's no responsibilities. There's no jobs or kids or family members or friends that are there for you to even just be aware of. It's just your consciousness. And you ask yourself, what do I want right now? What do I need right now? And that can, the answer that can come through, it may be instant, it may take a bit. Often it's not a clear, concise word or a vision. Often it's something that's just felt in the body. And it might be a desire for, like, I just want some peace. I just want to be able to slow down. I just want to rest. Or it might be, I want excitement. I want inspiration in my life. I want, you know, all of these different things that aren't so much tangible concepts to visualize, but you feel it in your body what you need. And the reason I kind of bring this up is sometimes if you find yourself in a space or a situation that's not great or ideal that you want, when you ask yourself, what do I want and need? They can be the same. And it might be like maybe you're in a relationship which is toxic, or it's, you know, it's not serving you. And what you know you need isn't necessarily, you don't have to say, I need to leave this relationship. But what you need is spaciousness. What I need is a sense of sovereignty, of the ability to just breathe and be myself right now. And let that desire guide or inform any intentions or actions that you take from there. So not like, you know, you're sitting there in the void and you're like, I desire a whole new life and a new home away from this person, you know, because really when we visualize that situation, we can still go, well, why do you need a new life and new home away from that person? What is it that you're really gaining from that? What you need is your own space and your own ability to breathe and be yourself again. So yeah, connecting into your wants and your desires doesn't have to be that quite as black and white, again, as linear as we often kind of think it needs to be. And it can be quite a soft, fluid, kind of intuitive kind of process as well, and just allowing that and learning what that might feel like to follow as well.
Yeah, I love this, and I've done this practice with you, Rach, and it's really powerful when you take that time to just, as you said, to just sit in the void. So yeah, let's go back. Like, have you got any other, like, because I know you do, that's the reason I'm asking this question, any other kind of practical things that women can do, and especially women on this motherhood journey, to really drop into our inner voice? Even when we've got all of these other voices going on around us, how can we come back into our body and into our truth?
Yeah, I think this is the case for everyone, but it's something that you witness a lot, particularly in women during pregnancy, is this relationship between our intuition and the state of like our nervous system, really. And what, you know, what I find, so basically, like, our intuition, if we're just getting like down to like brass tacks, right, intuition is a felt sense in the body. It is a way that your body physically communicates your truth to you, usually in a pretty quick, usually like in an instant, like while your head's taking like hours or days or weeks, like looking at every if and but and like any eventuality and potentiality. your head will spend God knows how long coming to a conclusion to, you know, something where your heart knows it in an instant if you only just dropped in and asked. So that's, you know, the first thing is to understand that your intuition is a felt sense in the body. And to be able to hear it, you need to be able to be in a state where your body can communicate effectively and clearly to you. And I think all too often that can't happen when our body is all the way up here, like, you know, heightened in a state of fight or flight and stress, essentially. So long as we are in that heightened state, our defenses are up, our, you know, all of our senses are like on edge because we're like, oh, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? You know, needing to be protecting ourselves. And we need to be able to drop ourselves back into that kind of parasympathetic nervous system, back into that place where we can, you know, they call it rest and digest, but also just to feel completely safe enough to play and enjoy and be, you know, experiencing pleasure in our lives in order to have our body be able to understand it's in a state where it can communicate clearly and easily to us and it's safe to do so. It's not having
It's like it's masked, like the body might be trying to communicate with us, but when it's also communicating all this other stuff, like I'm not safe, that message gets lost or it's much more difficult to hear. So that's so important that it's it's our body that communicates our inner knowing, then our body needs to feel safe for us to hear what it's telling us.
Yes. And I think it's important to acknowledge, like when we are in actual imminent danger, of course, our brain will kick in. Mm-hmm. Our brain, that's, you know, anxiety even, right, is just our brain jumping ahead in the future to see this could be dangerous, this could go wrong, do all of these other, like go somewhere else, do a different path to avoid that situation, right?
Yeah.
Which can tie us in knots. Not saying that's a good thing, that's our brain going overboard, but our brain is designed to protect us, all of these thoughts, right? So if we're actually in imminent danger, that's helpful. But what we want is to be able to be in a state where really most of the time we're not. And we need to be able to bring ourselves into a state where we can calm ourselves enough to be able to hear those communications that is our truth and it's felt that our bodies are communicating.
Yeah, I love everything that you say about this. It's so helpful. It's just, practical and simple and relevant. So this has been amazing. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're working on at the moment, because I know you have a few offerings and you'll be opening your books up again soon. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're working on at the moment and how women can connect with you further?
Sure. So you can connect with me on Instagram. I have just taken a little hiatus from there, but I'm back now. So, and I'm on there too much. I'm trying to control it, but you can find me over there. It's at rachel.hodgins. And in terms of the work that I do, so I always kind of have one-on-one sessions available that you can book in. They're kind of just like little one-off sessions where we can dive into whatever's coming up for you at that time. If it's mainly for women who are feeling kind of stuck or there's something that they're wanting to kind of really just reflect on or move through and they're looking for a bit of guidance, those sessions are great. But I also offer one-on-one, like 3 months mentorship containers, which I'll be opening spaces for that again soon in the next few weeks. And that is the Wild Heart Journey. So in that, I can't really describe exactly what it is because it's different for every single woman, but essentially it's reclaiming that the wild woman within. So unraveling any like patterns and conditioning stories that they're really embedded within their lives and reweaving our lives in a way that's true and authentic to us. So in it, we might explore, the menstrual cycle, our own inner rhythms, ritual ways to connect with earth and moon and all things like that, exploring ancestral kind of patterns and the mother line. Oh, so much, basically just wherever a woman's at. And it's funny, I find that everyone who's started the journey, they'll have their intentions for the beginning. Like, this is really what I think I'm struggling with or what I'm called to do. And then the path takes a completely different turn. Mm. And it turns out it's something very different that we're called to explore. And that is the beauty of it.
Mm,
that
is, exactly.
That's the nature of the feminine. So it's such a powerful place and space. So yes, I'll be opening doors up for that soon. And then hopefully within probably early next year, there will be a course on its way that's all about relating to the menstrual cycle, not just kind of in terms of the physical cyclic nature, but also like the power and the things that we have access to within our own feminine nature that's embodied within those phases of the cycle, and the way in which our patriarchal conditioning has really specifically kind of taught us to stamp down and disengage and disconnect from those powers. So that's in the works.
That's so exciting. So that's kind of early 2022.
Yeah. Oh God, 2022. How is this possible? But yes, that's the plan at the moment. But I'm very much, I have to just add, like I can give time frames, but I don't do time frames. And anytime that I try to, I'm just like, yeah, no, I don't want to do that. So,
and that's what I love about the example that you are, is that like that is what it is to be embodied and to be within your truth, because that does change. And you might have an idea right now, and 2 months down the track, you're like, no, I don't want to do that. I'm just not going to.
Yeah.
Because you're like, there will be all the stories. I've had to learn this myself. There'll be all the stories of, well, I said I was going to, so I have to do that. But actually, I just don't want to, so I'm not going to do it.
Yeah,
so that might happen. I hope it doesn't happen, and I hope that this course that you're talking about does happen, because it just sounds incredible. But
it will come. It will come. It's been on its way for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, it's been a process of allowing. Yeah, like I've tried to push it, and then sometimes I've even put it out there, and then I'm still like, you know, I don't want to.
Not time. Yeah, it's not ready.
So yeah, 100%. But yeah, basically come find me on Instagram and, you know, message me. I would love to connect with you. And yeah, probably other thing is just you can listen to the podcast, which is always, you know, full of bits and pieces, I think, that's useful. And also the moon episodes as well. I've found a lot of women are kind of finding that the moon episodes are a really, really, really potent way of kind of like dropping into and becoming really aware of the energy and that cyclic rhythm that they're moving through and experiencing, everyone in their own individual way. But just something, another way to kind of anchor into that that energy.
Totally. And your podcast, the Weaving the Wild podcast, which I'll link to in the show notes, is amazing, because for exactly that reason, like you're such a great, you don't even think of yourself as an astrologer, yet you are like an amazing one, because you can talk about the energies at the time in a way that's broad enough that it's relevant to everyone, but also specific enough that I always listen to you and I feel like you're talking directly to me. Like you, it's so amazing. And if you are listening and you are interested in learning about like more about connecting with your menstrual cycle as well, Rach has lots of episodes about the menstrual cycle and also just about like practical embodiment practices as well. So it's such an amazing resource that you're building in that podcast, Rach.
Thank you.
And we'll link to all of that in the show notes. Thank you so much for your time, Rach. It's been such a pleasure. And yeah, I get to chat to you and call it work. So this was fun. Let's do it again.
I don't want it to end. We'll just have to keep talking after this.
I'll keep recording and everyone else can just listen to us continue to crap on for another ramble 2 hours.
No, it's been amazing. And thank you so much for having me.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks for listening to the Wild Mother Podcast. I'm living and mothering on the unceded country of Dharawal people, and I gratefully acknowledge their ongoing work and the work of Indigenous people everywhere in the service of thriving life on Earth. Stay wild, mamas.